And we are back, Stripe Show podcast on Masters Week. How about it, folks? We made it. 1st of April, best player in the world, gathering up in Augusta National for the Masters. Going to be exciting. So this is a big podcast this week. We've got a great lineup here. Great coach joining us here today. Jake Thurm going to join the podcast next week, and we're working on some other terrific guests, including Justin Parsons, who is the coach of Brian Harman, who won again on the PGA Tour, the lefty. I've got some cool video to show you guys of Brian Harman, the Georgia Bulldog, winning the Valero Texas Open. But let's get to our guest this week. He's joining me out in the beautiful state of Colorado. His name is Mr. Riley Andrews. Riley, welcome to the Stripe Show podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, man. I'm excited to get to know you better. And obviously, Travis, we were just talking, seeing your stuff all over the place for good grief, probably going on a decade now. So yes, it's great to sit down and chat with you, man, and talk shop.
A decade.
Yeah.
Last night I was laying in bed. I was thinking, you know, I'm 47 and I've been in Florida now for 24 years. So officially I've been in Florida for over half of my life, originally growing up in the Pacific Northwest, not far from you there in Colorado. Man, time flies. Getting out here and teaching golf now for the better part of 24 years. Hard to believe. You've been doing it for a while yourself. You're doing it at a high level. Your product, Elite Golf Schools, it's grown and doing well. Tell my audience about it.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. It's it's a ball. I mean, Elite really started from like a collegiate preparatory junior type of an academy. That's what I grew up in. My mentor, Doug Wary, I met him when I was 14 years old. And he grew an amazing junior presence in Colorado. And I was fortunate enough to have him as my guy. Right. And so I think what was really cool, it wasn't the typical golf instruction, right? It wasn't like, hey, come in for 30 minutes or come in for an hour. It was this really open concept where you sign up with him. He's going to be at the course every single afternoon. And myself and other students could just show up and just go work, right? And, you know, you never were stressed out about time or being able to see him. You could consistently work with him. And so it just created this awesome culture, you know, within myself to my mentor, Doug, and then all these other peers around where we could like just super organically create like this competitive culture and compete against one another, go out and play, and just go about it from like a day-to-day structured basis and just continue to work with them. So when I opened up Elite Golf Schools, that's what was in my mind when it comes to, you know, golf instruction. It's this really welcoming type of an atmosphere where kids can just come out and let's go to work and let's go beat on it. So yeah,
that's well said. I respect that, because when I built this studio, and I was coming from as a director of instruction for TPC Sawgrass, and was working at Golf Channel for a little bit. And you know, you think of those places and they're spectacular places, right? And they do so many great things for the sport. But at the same time, like, it can be a little intimidating at times, I think, for, you know, someone maybe new to the game, maybe a junior golfer or whatnot. So when I was building the studio, it was really important that we build the studio in a way that, hey, yeah, you can get people who are experienced golfers in here. But I want it to feel like a family walks in here, and I want it to feel like when that mom walks in here and that 8, 9, 10-year-old walks in here, that they want to be here, you know, and that they feel comfortable here and it's welcoming and the environment, to your point, the culture. And I feel like we've done that. And it's interesting to watch juniors walk into the studio who've never played golf before, and they see the sim and they see the stuff that we have set up. And, you know, I have one of the best junior teachers and Dave Myers and Tom Murtaugh. They do a great job. And these kids, you know, like, they walk in, they're like, hey, I'm not sure about it. And then an hour later, like, I'm sure about golf. I like it. This is cool. And part of it, I think, is just, it's not so much that they hit the ball better. It's just that they feel comfortable with where they're at.
Yeah, you are spot on. And what's amazing, I mean, you can see your bay right there. It's cool, right? We talk about this as a coaching group at Elite as well. If we can create just almost the aesthetics when you first walk into either a studio or the driving range or wherever it is that we're coaching for that particular day, but it just exudes excellence. And it's so funny how no matter the age, people just want to be around things that are excellent and feel excellent. And they almost start to embody that as well. And it's almost drug-like, right? Where it's like, okay, that's really fun. This is a great place to be. And then, you know, obviously with mentorship or coaching or whatever you want to call what it is that we do on a day-to-day basis, all of a sudden you start to understand where, you know, better shots come from on a consistent basis. And there's another drug. So it's cool because you've got you know, these 8-year-olds that come in going, oh geez, you know, I don't even know if I like golf, let alone love it. And all of a sudden they leave with their interest, like in the game sparked. I mean, good grief. That's mentorship like 101 right there, baby. So cool to hear you say that as well.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, let's transition here. I want to go to the PGA Tour here for a second, of course, with so many things happening. The Valero Texas Open was last week at TPC San Antonio, which is a great property and a difficult golf course, and that you could see just how difficult that course can play when that wind whips up. Harmon went in at 9-under, but you know, second was Garrard at 6-under, then McNealy at 5. I mean, these are the best players in the world only shooting 5-6-under par. And finishing second and third on the PGA Tour speaks volumes. But this was the fourth win from Brian Harmon, and I want to show you this video and get your reaction to it. Thanks for listening to on the audio side. Of course, a lot of you watch video-wise. And what I'm going to play here for our audience who are just listening, I'm going to play Brian Harmon when he was about, I think he was 9 or 10. He's standing in front of one of the greats, Jack Lumpkin, and he you know, he's swinging this club, an iron. And then I'm going to play Brian Harmon. I think this video, Justin Parsons sent it to me, who's his current coach. I think it's from like a year or two ago. And it's amazing the similarities. Check this out, Rob. I'm going to play this one first. Lefty here. like you kind of tell, like this kid's going to be a pretty good player right here.
Yeah.
When, let's play this one again here. And Jack Lumpkin standing in front of him.
Yeah. And Travis, right, how old did you say Brian is in this video?
I don't know. I think he doesn't he look about 10-ish? I think,
yeah, 10 plus or minus one on either side.
I think he's 10. Now here he is as a grown man here. He's got his alignment stick.
Yep. Yeah.
Look at this. Look at this finish. Let's play that one more time. And all right. I mean,
so good.
There's a lot of similarities there.
Oh man. Yeah. It's so funny. Like you said, I think prior to us hopping on the recording portion of this, you still see the DNA, right? That still looks like Brian, which is amazing when you see these guys, you know, whether it comes to Tiger, seeing him as like a 4 or 5-year-old punk out there hitting balls, and he still looks like Tiger. Like the rhythm is the same almost, you know? It's difficult to explain exactly what it is, but you still see like that golfer's soul in them, which is just, it's cool to see because obviously we're seeing him win PGA Tour events. And obviously when he's 10 years old, he's not ready for that yet, but you still see the same type of person in there.
Yeah. There's a DNA there for sure. And I think with Brian, it's like, it might even be more distinct because it's left-handed and there's a rhythm and a flow that is very apparent in both of those swings. Now, obviously, there's some differences, too. When you look at Brian as a young man, the club head gets a little more inside. When you look at Brian as more of an adult, the club head's definitely working more up in front of him. But there is a DNA there. And one of the things that I struggle with, Riley, with my junior students, not all of them, but there's some that they, you know, good players developing their – or some of them just getting into the game, but the ones that that you know play and take it a little more serious, they want to get better. They're playing golf every day, and they come in here and we're working on some technique or whatever to make the game a little bit easier and more efficient. But their bodies are changing. Some of them are growing rapidly, which we know kind of throws things off a little bit, and so everything's kind of a little bit of in flux. And you know, they go through periods like every other golfer where they hit it really, really good and play really, really good. And then they go through periods where they're not hitting it very good. They're not scoring very good. I mean, newsflash to everybody, that's the case for everybody that plays the game. Like, you're going to have those moments. But what's difficult is when you get the text of, hey, can you take a look at my swing? What am I doing wrong? And that's where it's like, you know, you want to pick your moments, at least for me, Riley, where you want to coach it up. And then you want to, but at the same time, you don't want to be this just safe haven all the time and make it always technical and where, hey, go dig it out of the dirt. Keep grinding. You know, you'll find it. You'll work your way through it and figure it out. That's the difficult part, is to kind of keep some of the DNA in there and create the environment for them to self-discover, for them to figure it out. But at the same time, be a coach and be able to help them through that process. It's give and take. And sometimes I feel like I do a pretty good job of it. Sometimes I feel like I struggle with it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I mean, to kind of like walk through that, there's like so many layers to that onion that you just like opened up right there, T.
Right.
Our game is so interesting, isn't it? That the majority of coaching, quote unquote coaching, is in the technical aspect of the game, which is very important for sure. Mm-hmm. But the amount of skills that it takes to develop your game to be one of the highest level players in the world is extraordinary. I mean, look, last year we had the BMW in Colorado at 6,000 feet in elevation. So that ball responds a heck of a lot different than where you're living down in Jacks, mm-hmm. right? So understanding altitude, understanding different types of grass, like how the golf ball performs out of zoysia compared to Bermuda, compared to rye, compared to bent, greens, mm-hmm. slopes and greens, elevation changes, different types of wind. It's just incredible. So that is all like the playability of the game, let alone like putting, dude, is almost like a different sport compared to driving. Like how you hold it is different. How you stand to it is different. The tool is built completely different, right? So mm-hmm. there's not nearly the amount of consistencies that there are in like a sport like basketball, where the rim's always 10 feet, ball is always the same. You have all these different variables within our game. And in my opinion, the real reason to work on technique is so that you can control a golf ball at a really high level, mm-hmm. like period. That would be, I think, kind of 101, right? Like if we were discussing a great putter, what are we insinuating first and foremost? That the golf ball goes in the hole, right? Mm-hmm. Like you never hear somebody go, oh my gosh, their putting stroke is just so great. It's just too bad that they don't make putts. You know, like you're not going to correlate just technique with a great putter. It's what the golf ball ends up doing, right? We say that Rory is a great driver of the golf ball because of what the ball does, right? So his technique is just the passageway to get to the command of the ball. That's why we work on technique, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I think that's well said. And there's a lot of coaches that listen to this podcast, and they're coaching and they're, you know, trying to find their voice and trying to build their book, trying to build their brand, business, all those things. And you just have to kind of get in there and go through it, right? And you kind of live and learn through this journey. But I think it's important as a coach, like especially as you start getting very busy and you have a lot of students, in balancing that problem-solving act, especially for junior players. I mean, you want to be there and you want to provide that support, but at the same time, I think you have to give them some leeway and some runway to self-discover and figure things out, and know that that journey will continue over a period of time. So it's it's hard. Even in adults, like, you know, I get texts from students, and sometimes it's, you know, man, I'm struggling from the round today. And it's hard not to live and die by every round. You can't live and die by every round, every shot, especially as a coach for every player. Like, you have to be able to disconnect, but at the same time manage the journey from a distance. So it's interesting. Harmon, some DNA in there for sure, in the rhythm of that swing. I want to get to Real quick on the Masters before we get to your first video, because there's some videos here I want to play that's from your Instagram, at @coach_Riley_EGS. And it's a great follow and a lot of great info. And I before we get to that, but have you Augusta, Masters, have you ventured through that part of the country at all? Any stories, elite golf schools through Georgia?
Yeah. So I've gone to the Masters once, okay, and I'm hesitant to go back because my experience was, I don't think it could get better. Right. So I'm 37 years old. So my guy is Tiger, right? Okay. Like kind of the reason that I got into the game, other than my aunt who drug me to a driving range one day, my inspiration was Tiger, right? Mm-hmm. So I went 19.
Yeah. I mean,
and I had an unbelievable experience because I was able to go every single day and had some passes that were really, really special too, that got me kind of up close and personal. Mm-hmm. And I got to see it. Right. And I mean, your first time at Augusta is just, I mean, you're walking on the spot, right? I would imagine it would feel similar at like St. Andrews as well. Mm-hmm. But like Augusta's the place, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think like the craziest thing to me, because you always hear about like, hey, you got all these slopes and it's crazy and like the terrain is nuts. And so you're almost like expecting that. So it's not that big of a shock when you first see it.
Mm-hmm.
But the two things that were nuts to me were one, how small the greens actually are.
Right.
When you're looking at 10 from that camera, like they have that, you know, the camera right behind the green complex and you're seeing golf balls come in, the green looks ginormous. Well, when you get there, it looked like it was half the size of what I was seeing the first time being there. It's
same with 18.
18 is ridiculous. 18 looks massive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you get there and you're like, dude, this thing is like 50 feet deep. It's not small.
It's super small.
And then the size of the trees, right? The trees are just ginormous. They were probably twice as high as I was expecting. And you know, how the wind just kind of works in between those like causeways of fairways. It makes sense why it swirls in there. So,
it's
a pretty amazing property for sure, man. But yeah, that's my story on Augusta. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to go
back. Yeah, you probably should. No, you probably should. 2019, that's tough to match. And I think it's fair to say, I mean, I think Tiger's probably won his last Masters, unfortunately. Continued issues that he's had with his body. All right, let's get into some teaching. And I, you know, I've got some notes here and we're going to get to one of these first videos in a second. But when I like, I watch a lot of your videos, I mean, some of the terminology that I hear, and I want to kind of, you know, set the stage with this, is your emphasis and attention to detail on what the club shaft is doing, right? Like how the shaft is moving in space, and particularly the shaft pitch, you know, from vertical to horizontal, the club face prep and how the club face is working, and then the body, right? You spend a fair amount of time talking about how the body can rotate through impact, which I think when you say to an amateur player, hey, just rotate your body through impact. And what we're going to talk about today on how to maybe use the ground a little differently from a torque perspective to create more rotation, right? And how to rotate. How do I use my feet, knees, hips to rotate more efficiently? So club shaft, club face, body rotation, I think are some of the terms that we're going to get into. So let me play this first video, Riley, sure. and then we'll have some fun after that. Check this out.
Here my sacrum is, or where these two belt loops are. If I go right in here, there's the pelvic swivel. See how the sacrum goes at you and also away from the target. Boom. Look at this trail femur look. Look at my right ass cheek. Still very loaded. Now I get the golf club down here. Now look. My AOA is not going to be like crazy. Here goes my pelvis. My rib cage can start to motor through. Here's the unload. That's super neutral. See the pelvis like wash out of there? Rib cage can go crazy forward. And right in here, big time supination of this trail hand. Look at me. Woo. I'm ready to do some damage now, dude. Pelvic swivel, supination act here. Let's just get the ribs forward. Supinate. There's the pelvis. Rib cage through and forward into four.
So take us through that video, the inspiration of that video. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. First, a lot of the videos that I'm posting, those are actually swing analyses for individual students, right? And I think I like posting those the most rather than going, "Hey, ginormous audience, look at like, you know." It's more like it adds a personal flavor, which is why I coach in the first place. Like, I love people and I love our game, so it's like a lot of those are just those types of videos, but. At the same time, if I'm going to post it on like a public space like Instagram, then I want the information that's in there that's going to resonate with the majority of people that watch it, right? So when we go into like items like rotation, it's super interesting, T, that you bring up like this idea of rotation. If I ask five people to rotate, just go turn your body, rotate your body. I'm going to see five different ways of doing that, right? How somebody takes that information of just turn and then applies it is it's just different, right? And that's why I tend to use enough anatomical language because it's very specific, right? If I say supinate, that's a way of rotating, right? And either like the foot or the hand or whatever it is that I'm talking about, right? So going back into like that particular video, typically when I tell somebody to rotate, for whatever reason in a player's mind, they think about the pelvis. And most of the time what they'll do is they'll rotate and move their pelvis laterally towards the target as they're turning, right? Or rotating the pelvis. So when we get this like lateral sway of the pelvis, the ribs are going to respond to that. And just in general, the ribs and the pelvis, just in the direction of their movement, are always going to counter one another to stay in balance, right? Like if I shove my pelvis towards the target, my ribs aren't also going to go towards the target because I'll fall over on my left side as a right-handed player, right? So if the pelvis sways forward in its rotation, the rib cage is always going to tilt away and the ribs move away from the target, and it'll stall out the rotation in the chest. Mm-hmm. So that's typical. 19 out of 20 people all see that pattern, right?
So real quick on that before you finish that thought, because, you know, you go back when I got in the instruction back in 1999, I think that's the way the pivot was taught. I don't think everybody taught it that way, but I think in general it was taught to bump the pelvis lateral and take on more early side bend, right shoulder drops in transition.
Yes, you're 100% right. That was, and I think a lot of that came from Faldo was kind of the originator of this. And when you think back at that time with Faldo, like when he would swing it, there's a lot of toe droop of the club at the top, right, where the face is going to be a little bit more open because of that. And the way that you've got to square the golf club is you have to allocate plenty of rotation in the arms and the hands. So there's more external rotation of the lead arm, more active supination of the lead hand through the hit. And so that action in the arms pairs really well with lateral sway in the pelvis and more of a tilting type of an action to help slot the club, into delivery so that you can manage that type of a hit, right? Like, and I think at the end of the day, that's what we're seeing is like this difference between how people, just intuitively are going, how do I take this instrument that I'm holding and square it at the strike? Cause at the end of the day, I don't care if it's your very first golf swing you've ever made or if you're friggin' Tiger, the number one item that you're unconsciously looking, to support or manage is the club face. Baseball is different. There is no club face. It's wherever the bat is pointing in its perpendicular state. That's where we're going to pressure the ball. Golf is not like that, right? Like wherever the racket is pointing is where the ball isn't really going to start relatively, right? So, and there's two real extremes to control that. There's more of a Hovland extreme or like a Lee Trevino extreme. And then we've got a Scheffler extreme. Or a Jimmy Walker extreme. And by the way, when I'm saying this, like there's there's no knock on any of those players. No. I mean, dude, they're all friggin' PGA Tour players. So there's a ton of different ways to control the ball at extremely high levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, kind of looking back at that video, it's, I'm just looking to pressure that particular player where they're keeping their pelvis a little bit more underneath their trunk so they can rotate their trunk a little freer. And hit in a bit of a different way with the arms just so that we're like managing the rate of rotation of the face. Their bottom out will be under control a little bit better. Their path will be under control better. So at the end of the day, their intuition of hit will be easier for them more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are different ways, but I also think, and I think it's appropriate to pay that off in the respect of that. Obviously, when you watch the best players in the world, that there are different styles and that the Hall of Fame is filled up with different styles. There is a DNA in there. There is a genius in there. There's no doubt. But I also think it's fair to say that as a teacher, that when you watch thousands of amateur players come through your studio, come onto your lesson team, and you see thousands of swings literally every year. I mean, I don't know how many lessons I've done in 24 years. It's, you know, I've lost count. So it's,
yeah.
So I have a memory bank and I have experience watching patterns, right? Of amateur players who play at different skill sets, have families, have jobs, and play once a week or whatever. And you see the pitfalls, you see the barriers, where they level out, where the probability of impact becomes of such where they can't move the needle any further forward, right? I mean, they've leveled out. And so you look at those patterns and you're like, okay, based off the pattern I'm looking at, I'm going to make a change and I'm going to change this player in this way to start to suggest and improve the probability of impact so they can hit a higher quality shot. So their ceiling elevates, but also their floor is going to elevate because it's going to eliminate a lot of their big miss. And so you start going down that path and you start registering all these different patterns that you see. I think it's okay to say, well, based off of the thousands and thousands and thousands of swing, I tend to hang my hat on this. I tend to hang my hat on whatever that might be. When it comes to the club face, when it comes to the club shaft, when it comes to the pivot, knowing that everybody is still a little different, but through the masses of people that you've seen and through those journeys of improvement, I think it's okay to make some statements that way, you know, like, hey, this is what I think, you know, and I think it's okay for those to live out there too.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, I know from my journey in coaching, the way that I've explained the golf swing has absolutely morphed over the course of years, right? And is it going to morph again? Yeah, probably, right? I'm going to learn more. I'm going to see how the articulation that I use gets transmitted into a student and how much faster I can get players to improve. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and it kind of goes back to just look like the golf club is an instrument, just like a damn saw is an instrument. It's meant to be used in an easy way or its easiest way. And then you have all these levels of complexity on top of that. Now, if I got a Phil Mickelson in front of me, am I going to change his entire way of hitting down there? No, even though his rate of rotation of club face is psychotic, like it's crazy elevated. Mm-hmm. His arm structure changes tremendously through the hit. Am I going to change him a ton? No. Mm-hmm. Because like, look, Phil has Phil hands at the end of the day, right? Too. And there's genius in it, like you just brought up. So am I going to make Phil look like Neiman? No.
No.
No, I'm not, right? But that's a different level of player as well compared to if I have a 10-year-old in front of me that's fairly raw with the game. Well, gosh, I've got him for 8 years.
Yeah.
Every day. It's kind of a block of wood that I can just take an axe to and hack off all the things. So we're almost building a player there. And plus, like if I've got this 10-year-old that goes, I really want to go play on tour. Darn near at best, 25 years old is when he's going to be playing on tour. So what is the game going to be like in 15 years? Mm-hmm. Well, ball speed's probably going to be 185 on tour at average then. So I need to give him a pathway or provide a pathway for that particular player that, you know, who knows if they're going to actually make it or not, because a lot of it is on them. At best, I'm the bumpers in bowling, right? But look, like, if you want to go play on tour, you got to be 185 ball speed. Okay. Well, that's really fast. Plus, if the ball's in the air for that long, you better control the instrument at a pretty darn high level there, because if that thing's doing a bunch of crazy business, are you going to hit some really great shots? Sure, but does it increase your probability of some catastrophic misses during the course of 72 holes? Yeah. So you can't hit it out of bounds and play on tour. You can't.
No.
You got to hit arrows.
Yeah. Well, you can't hit it short, and, you know, it's almost getting to the point where it's difficult to hit it short and be on tour. Now, there's certain courses still for that, and Harmon's not a long hitter, and I think when you look at TPC San Antonio with the wind blowing, it certainly can neutralize things in the way that course plays. But I'll start with some of the things that I've seen. Then I want to get to this second video, and I make these, you know, these definitive statements sometimes on social, and of course it gets pushed back, and that, oh well, you know, Phil doesn't do that, or it's like, no, I get that, you know. But at the same time, I also see a lot of Phil Mickelson wrist structure come through here, and and arm structure that comes through here, and usually those people really struggle leaning the shaft forward and hitting it on the center of the face. So it's like, that statement's true also, you know, I mean, you know, you see what I'm saying? So it's like, you can play both sides. You can acknowledge one side, but also acknowledge the other. And what we can provide on the other is that for a lot of amateurs, there are patterns that they struggle with. So how do you move the needle? Well, I mean, one, I tend to probably, and this is not everybody, right? But more times than not, through development, I'm trying to get the club face to be more prepared earlier in the swing, not late. I'm trying to get the club face to be more square, maybe even slightly shut for most. Earlier, not an impact, earlier in the swing. I'm trying to, definitely in the swing, I'm trying to get the shaft to pitch shallower versus steeper more times than not. I'm constantly fixing the inside takeaway. Constantly. The club head gets behind the hands early and then the shaft's too horizontal at the top, and then they steep it in transition. And so I'm constantly, and this is a segue into the second video here that I love that you posted, where, you know, you're getting the shaft to be a little bit more vertical so you can shallow it, you know? And so these are the things that you start to see. And so it's easy to make the statement, because you have thousands and thousands and thousands of examples, like, hey, let's get the face shut earlier in the swing. To do that, you know, it doesn't always have to be the grip. I like to get the wrist angles involved, which I know you do too. Get the shaft vertical going back so you can shallow it. I'm lengthening, Riley, more swings out than I'm shortening up for the amateur player. And so, is that for everybody? No. But is it for the masses? Yeah, I'll say it is.
100%, man. I mean, you gave me goosebumps a couple of times there, because it's just the nice thing is if you rep enough times, you're going to get better to a point. Mm-hmm. Now, the ideas in your mind are going to just allow for wherever that ceiling can end, right? So if I'm a 20 handicap, 20-year-old, and I've got enough time to go out and hit 500 golf balls a day, and because I love this game so much, I want to do that. It's my craft, right? Yeah. If I have a pattern that's really going to allow me to push the ceiling height on my best shot, man, I can get to a scratch or a plus, no questions asked, mm-hmm. right? Now, if you go out and hit 500 balls a day any old way, are you going to get better? Yeah, you are. You're going to figure out the game. You're going to put friggin' iron to turf. Like, that's cool and good on you for working your ass off to earn a quality game. But the point is just where's your ceiling? That's where coaching comes in. Just your knowledge and understanding of the instrument and the tool is a really, really important thing to understand and know. And that might actually be, we operate through three global laws here, just all coaches at elite golf schools. And one of them, we name them kind of funny, but one of the first ones is geometry. We're just describing where the club is moving in space, the entire club. Mm-hmm. And I say that in that way, moving being the operative term, the dynamics of the tool. And again, golf instruction historically, how we describe it, I mean, in most drills are like freezer drills. That's a static drill. This also is where like a lot of, I think players' frustration elevates because they can perform the move, whatever the move is, in a static way. And then as soon as they go, well, I'm going to go one motion, all of a sudden it's like this totally different thing. So really the map is wrong. The map needs some altering so that you can actually perform and move the club dynamically in space, in the position, the space where it's moving through, like you want, for whatever reason that is. So if you want to shallow the club, well, a lot of it, you know, when you're saying, hey, I see a lot of golf swings go under, I see a lot of golf clubs that pitch over it right off the bat. I mean, my just general argument why we see that in the majority of players, like in the backswing, we look at the target and we go, oh, I know how to move the golf club away. And we take this lead arm and we adduct it. So it moves across me and shoves the golf club away from the target. However, I'm going to neglect that I'm going to turn to some degree as well. And now where's that club? Way back behind me. And I've got to lift it up over. Now where's the dynamic action of the club going? Up over the top. Plus, at the end of the day, I want the golf ball to go forward. What makes the ball go forward? The club face. So as soon as I get it to the top, it's not pointing towards the target. Immediately, I want to shut it down more. And it's up here 10 feet above where the ball is, so I want to lower it. So the lead arm just lowers it down, closes the face. So we see that general geometry with most players that start the game because of that intuition. Yeah. Right. So I think that's where you're talking about, like, this next video that we're going to discuss, why we're describing where the club is moving in space like we are, is because of that. Where are we moving the golf club dynamically relative to my body?
All right. Well, let's get to that that second video. Before we do that, little word from Lab. If you're like most golfers, you blame yourself when you miss a short putt. So after you hold back the urge to throw your putter in the lake, don't do that. You try to fix your putting stroke. But how long does that last? 1 week, one round, one hole? There's a company called Lab Golf that doesn't think you should be blaming yourself. That's because all putters have this thing called torque, which means the putter face is trying to twist during stroke. So you grip it like a snake. What Lab Golf did is they figured out how to make putters with no torque. They call it lie angle balance. And you have to feel it to believe it. I did. The Lab Golf putter, you don't have to use a funny putting grip to try to keep the face square. You can putt it any way you want because Lab Golf putter stays perfectly square by itself. It's effortless. To see how much easier putting can be, head over to labgolf.com. All right, so let's get into some geometry, which I love. I love that word, geometry. I'm gonna steal the word map. Use the word map a lot. You know, I talk like I say swing shape and those kinds of things and dynamic, but I like the map, like the club, the map of the swing. But this is important. This video here, again, for those watching, you'll see it. For those listening, it's going to talk about how this backswing kind of works a little bit more, and then from there, how that can help facilitate in the change of direction, the shaft, and then leading into better rotation.
Club moves up and over. This is the shape of the club. It goes there. But that only makes sense if I turn over here, then it can go up. Now it looks like a backswing. Now, I'm saying it moves this way. It only makes sense if I drop and turn and that response. So it's turn here, drop, turn there. Now it looks like a golf swing. We're here, we're there. Even though I'm still actively moving the club like this, we're here, there, peace.
So the key word that I hear a lot and I use a lot in my teaching, and you see it in Brian Harmon, I'm bringing his swing back in, is that first move right there is the up. You know, like one of my favorite swings of all time, Riley, is Kenny Perry. And the reason is because he picked that club head up and then he made a big old turn And then he shallowed it and just hit the gas pedal as hard as he could. But I find the word that resonates the most in the backswing for those that dump it way inside is getting the club head to work more up. Not so much out, yes, out, but more up. What do you see?
Absolutely, man. And I think there's a couple of different ways to do that, right? And here comes anatomical again because it's specific. So we call this hammer drill. So if I have a hammer in my hand and I just pick the hammer up, that would be radial deviation or RD. If I wanted to unload the hammer, I'd go whoop down the opposite way, and that's ulnar deviation or UD, right? So if I did that with a club, I can get the club head going up and down, but I'm going to keep the club fairly neutral to maybe a little bit open that way as well. But if I also have, but there's a different way to do that as well, right? I could rotate, like say I still have the hammer, I could rotate the hammer head slightly. And then from here now, if I went into extension, then I could still throw the hammer head up, even though its orientation would change. So maybe if I change it from a hammer to a tennis racket, if I take the racket and I point it towards the ground more and then just hinge that up using extension, now we've got it up still, but the face is shut, the racket is shut more, which is kind of what we were talking about before, is we're like setting that early. So now I don't have to worry about it and try to manage it in transition, and especially not down at the bottom of the hit. Right. So, and I think too, like if we're describing the golf club just in general, like there's three main portions of the club. We have the club face, we have the center of mass of the club, which is really the balance point. So if you just took the club and balanced it on your finger level, that's the center of mass. And then the hub is the point where the hands meet together. So the hub is just a fancy word for a pivot point based on wrist structure. Right. So when we're describing the club going up, you and I are describing the center of mass of the club going up, not the handle or the hub going up.
Right.
It's the center of mass going up. And then finally, it's just like axial rotation, right? Which means, is the face more leaning towards a closure bias or an open bias? Mm-hmm. And what you and I tend to like more is, for the masses, tends to be more in a closed bias. So if I can get the face more shut, or like shut bias with the center of mass going up, it just allows for the club. Like when we're looking at Kenny Perry, I mean, his was unique because he'd just get it up and then turn, compared to a lot of guys now are like turning and then getting it up. So it's just the sequence in which that happens.
Yeah.
But it's still all relative to the body. It's going up in front of you, right? That center of mass going up in front of you, not back behind you.
Yeah. Up with the turn, up with the turn. If I, you know, I mean, how many times do I say that in this place with those that, you know, dump it in and don't turn, you know, they dump it in and then the turn erodes over time because they have to lift their arms and then, you know, back over the top.
Yep.
And I made a post about, a week ago or whatever, but I talked about one of the patterns I see a lot is that it goes inside behind them. And then sometimes the club shaft then gets very, you know, the arm takes it straight up and over, but I see a lot at times in and then laid off with a very restricted turn. And to me, that pattern as you get older is very detrimental because you can that turn can quickly erode over time where you're not turning at all. You know, like there's guys that come in here and they're like, I can't even believe I'm not even turning. Why am I not turning? It's well, because the club head's 5 feet behind you in the first, you know, in the first 3 feet of the backswing. So it's, you're not going to turn. It's already so far behind you. So you sense that and then you take it off to a different map, different pattern, different, you know, style from there. So you start showing them, okay, work it up. And now all of a sudden, well, you better turn. I mean, it's promoting you now to make a better turn. Do you find that, similar kind of, I would say, just so I go ahead and call it swing flaw that's showing up at elite golf schools.
Yeah, absolutely. We see it a ton. And, you know, again, isn't it just so interesting that when you change the dynamic of where the club is moving relative to the person's body, they all of a sudden start to make the adjustments that are needed. Like if you say that, hey, the club needs to go up, and then just show me like how would that then make sense to like just generally look right back here? What would you need to do? Well, I'd need to move it over here. And they all of a sudden start to turn, right? Their chest starts to rotate, which, by the way, way healthier pattern, because the majority of the time too, what we see is, you know, we'll get a lot of people that come in with like aches and pains. Where's the majority of aches and pains for our sport? Most of the time it's in lower back somewhere, right? Some kind of sciatic problem because of how they're moving. Even spine difficulties, like disc difficulties because of how they're moving. So again, if you're running that thing, like you said, 5 feet back behind you, there is no reason to turn because you would jeopardize the geometry of the space the club is moving in to such a high degree, you're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do instead? You just shove the pelvis out laterally and laterally bend from the L-spine, which L-spine, lumbar is not designed to do that. It's like small amounts of extension and flexion states in lumbar, but it doesn't like lateral bend and it doesn't like rotation down there. It just doesn't like it. Right. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you move the club in that space, now your body has to accommodate for that. And it just, you're opening up a whole bag of worms that you don't necessarily want to open.
When I watch that video also, it, you know, it goes vertical and then I see the shaft pitch back towards, horizontal, right? So it's the shaft's going, call it from more vertical towards horizontal transition. But as that's happening, I see you rotating in conjunction with that. When you get that shaft to pitch back behind, if a player, let's say a player's like, okay, pretty good going back, but when they change direction, it's still a little heavy. Like they're still getting the club head a little tippy coming down and you want it more horizontal. Will you get in there and start like, hey, here's how I want your wrists to bend?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and there's a lot of folks, it's funny because if I post something that is just so out of the norm, right? There's this one video on there that has just a ton of videos, but the reason or views on it, the reason it has so many views is because there's so many freaking hate comments on it. They just hate it, right? Like, because it looks so whack, right? You're like, whoa, that can't be right. And folks that come on to try to defend it are more going like, well, hey, no, he's just talking about a feel versus real thing. Mm-hmm. And I go, no, I'm not. I'm talking about real is real. But what we're missing here is oftentimes, again, just how we view the golf swing. Number one, we view the golf swing because of like the plane, which by the way, is just this like 2D line that we just draw on there and we go, that's the plane, right? And so when we take it off of that plane, that quote unquote 2D space and move it, immediately our minds are like, that cannot be right. Okay. So, When I'm moving over there, I mean, there's times that I'll grab a player's wrist and move that golf club without moving them. So I'm just taking the club and moving it all the way to the ground over here. So whatever force you want to call that, you can call it trail wrist supination. It's big internal here with the lead arm. It's working parallel to the person's coronal plane, which is really indicative of where the shoulder axis is pointing. I think, Jacobs 3D guys call that negative alpha force, whatever force you want to describe it as, is moving that way. Mm-hmm. And it continues to go down the coronal plane forever.
And for the audio, like he's talking about in the downswing, the club head is moving behind him. Like it's shallowing. The club head is moving behind him further as he's starting to rotate.
Exactly. Which again, doesn't make any friggin' sense.
Right.
This is like one of the hardest things to map out for a lot of players is one, like if I've swung up to P4, the finish of the away swing, and now I move that club just down like its leading edge line or like behind me again.
Yeah.
The face just stays away from the target, away from the target, away from the target, and goes away from the ball, which is like, what are we doing? Like they look at me like I have three heads, right?
Yeah.
Which on its own, that move doesn't make any sense if I want to hit the ball forward towards the target. But when it comes to concepts, a concept just simply means that I have this action paired with this action. It creates a concept. So what do I need with that to make it make any sense at all? All thoracic rotation. I'm taking this, again, like if I turn away just relatively, my shoulder axis would mm-hmm. rotate about 90 degrees in the backswing, right? Mm-hmm. And if I move the club along that same shoulder axis, the face would never square. It would just stay behind me. It would move away from the golf ball. But if I take that shoulder axis and then rotate it all the way back to where my chest was pointing towards the target, so it rotated 180 degrees, now it makes sense. So thoracic rotation paired along with that shallowing, negative alpha, the club going behind me, again, however you want to describe it. Now all of a sudden those two items paired together makes yeah. sense to make a concept, which it's like, that's how we can square the face.
It's a fun conversation, you know, when you get to that point with a student where you start telling them, look, you've got to start getting comfortable with the club head getting behind you in transition. And, you know, I think the hard part to that is oftentimes you'll hear the best players on TV and announcers talk about, well, he's trying to keep the club more in front of him. Well, that's a better player talking. That's a player who probably has went through long periods of time where the club head was maybe pitched too far behind them in transition, driving the path too far to the right. For the masses, my God, like that is, I don't want the club in front of you. I want the club behind you coming down. I want the club head behind you coming down. That is what most people need to learn more of, right? And as they do that, then it starts to facilitate more rotation. And now you can start to rotate better. And that's a fun point to get to with people because usually they're pretty well organized going back. The club face is prepared. And now, all right, here we go. You know, here comes, you know, now the club head's a little more behind you. Let's rotate. Last thing I'll say to that before we go to the third video. And this for the audience. Notice when Riley talks about rotation, he has talked about rotation with his spine, his chest. It's not just the hips, and that's the perception. Open the hips. It's really getting the chest to open up and then how the head can facilitate. And that kind of leads us, yeah, into this third video. Check this out because now we're talking. You're going to really see the chest rotation, the head swivel, and how this club now turns the corner and back around to the other side.
See this? If I kept going through here, look at this look. All the way up into finish, that's the look in the finish that I want you to have. Right there hit, now just keep spiraling up and you'll fold up over. There's the spiral, and I'm right here to hit. Now keep spiraling and fold the arms. Look at that club. I never allow this to go back over. Supinate, AB, keep spiraling to finish. Then we'd go one motion, but super duper chill. Right in here.
So there's no better feeling when you get an amateur to hit the ball with forward shuffling for the first time, you know, and when they hit it with forward shuffling and the face is square to maybe, you know, slightly de-lofted and all these things, like, whew, and they look at you like, okay, let's do the 5 series pack.
Oh man, yeah, it is. It's like coolest, craziest thing ever, man. When you get, and it's so, this is why, like, I mean, for us, I mean, yeah, do we have, we utilize Foresight at our locations. You know, we do have like hack motion and mm-hmm. you know, some little gizmos gadgets that can help people, but the sure. majority of it, like I have never seen somebody get like so excited when their path goes from like, 4 left to 2 right. Like, it's like, oh, that's cool. The like, holy crazy, like kind of, I want to cry right now. I'm so happy is from the sensory, the qualitative, like I just hit one that I know I didn't guess at the bottom. It was like a real shot.
Yeah.
Ugh, like that's where people are like, what is that? Give me more of that. Like in its whole brain, right? Conscious, unconscious, the map comes together to produce the thing, da, 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 da. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's the drug. That's the feel, right? Which is at the end of the day, we want that for every single player that we're fortunate enough to work with, whether they're a PGA Tour player, or if it's their very, you know, very first time ever experiencing coaching, mm-hmm. is something like that, right? They understand the golf swing at a higher level, but when they apply it, they get that ball and it's like, ooh, everything. Right. Mm-hmm. So And what's funny, like the video that you just shared is, it's not about the release. Like a lot of folks get on there and they're thinking that I'm, you know, I'm asking them to hold off the release at all. I'm not. We want the golf club like full go, right? Mm-hmm. Like all that energy can shoot out of the instrument, like release the heck out of that thing. It's never drug on. What we're describing there is the spiral line, which is that dude that's standing in the corner, right? And there's this beautiful blue ribbon like running right through him. And, this is where I always have to pay homage to Luke Bracke. He's one of my main mentors, Travis, that has helped me so much with just a better understanding of how we move, because my whole background, or a lot of my background, is in typical kinesiology. Like when I was in college studying kinesiology, a lot of it was like, this muscle does exactly this. Mm. And then you go to the next one and the next one. And we have like hundreds and hundreds of muscles, right? Yeah. So one, super tedious. And two, we end up, I absolutely was guilty of this. Like I started looking at the body as a system of levers and pulleys to make me move. Mm. We don't move like that. Like you watch Tyson throw a punch and it's like this like a ripple of like wave throughout all this jello in his body, all the tissue in his body, fascia, muscle, ligaments, tendon, organ, all freaking jello that holds our skeletal structure in place. Right. So when Luke like opened up the door for me to go, oh, fascial lines, like number one, there's only 8 major myofascial lines in our body. So way easier to see. And a lot of times what we're looking at is like this entire highway. Like when looking at the spiral line, it starts underneath the, you know, the person's skull and then like just runs all the way through and goes all the way through their feet, comes back up and attaches to the person's skull again. It's like 15 feet in length. Mm. And, you know, if again, for folks that aren't watching this, just hop on the Google machine and type in spiral line and you'll see that homie standing there. And what's beautiful, man, is those fascial lines act very much like rubber bands. If you stretch a rubber band from one end to the other, we would probably describe that rubber band as loaded. And there's tension in that system all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. The cool thing is if you just let one side go, once it's loaded, it will always unload in the same direction. So you get free speed because all I had to do was do this. I didn't have to try. And number two, it unloads in the same direction. Super duper healthy because mm-hmm. I'm getting all the energy throughout the course of an entire fascial line rather than individual joint groups. Mm. This is where it lies like why I have preferences in movement, health of movement. And yeah. I am fortunate enough to work with a bunch of golf psychos. Pretty cool that we're able to work with these guys that are going to work on their game so hard. So the last thing I'm going to do is give them something that if you rep a 7-iron 268 times, you're hurt after that session. That's a disservice on my part to that student.
Yeah, that's some deep stuff there. I like that. That's yeah. Spiral line. Everybody got to go Google that one. That's some good stuff. It's fun to see a player start to rotate and just let it go, you know? I like the term rotational freedom. You know, I hear Jeff Smith talking about that a lot, and oftentimes he's been on the podcast many times and talks about it. I think, you know, as it relates to the backswing some, but I also think it applies to the downswing when you start getting people organized enough, they feel like they can rotate. They feel like they can hit it and they got room at the bottom. And yeah. So it's really cool when you get to that point where they start rotating, they start staying in, you know, their orientation to the ball's better through impact, and they're getting the club to turn the corner and the club's exiting back around under the lead shoulder. And like, damn, I just hit that with Schaffling. And yep. It's fun. You know, I mean, that's why we do what we do. And I think, yes, everybody has different patterns and you learn to work individually with people, but there are very common pitfalls that people fall into in amateurs. And I think in general, and we'll kind of finish with this, Riley, and you've been great, is that, yeah, I mean, getting that club face prepared, square to slightly getting shaft pitch understood, understanding wrist angles, understanding how your pivot, you know, not only works going back, but in transition and being able to use the ground, rotationally. It's funny. I hear the term, use the ground up. You know, you hear that a lot, right? You start from the ground up. You know, like, I don't think most people really even know what that means. Like, I think it sounds cool, right? And it's like, so how your pivot is working into the ground and rotating, which that first video is brilliant, is part of it. So these are the things that we're constantly fixing and constantly seeing. And as you get them more organized, the geometry, they start rotating better and the face is more prepared. Yeah, the probability of impact improves dramatically. Their ceiling goes up. Their floor goes up. And I think that's the business we're in. And along the way, you build great relationships. You keep them motivated, so they can enjoy the game for years. And finally, to your point, healthy, so they can enjoy the game for years and years to come. So, man, it's been great. You've been awesome, man. Go follow Riley Andrews at coach_Riley_EGS at Elite Golf Schools. Your locations. Where are you at? Your locations.
Yeah, our physical locations: Colorado, Denver area, Phoenix, and then Village of Pinehurst is our newest location out east, East Coast, out with you, Mr. TF, okay. out in North Carolina there. So those are our physical locations as of now. Yes.
Awesome, Riley. Thanks so much, man, for joining us here on the podcast.
Travis, thank you so much, man. Have a great day, okay?